All right, Tim, welcome to the Appetite for Construction podcast. How are you doing, buddy?
Doing good. How are you?
Good. You're getting ready for a big trip, I understand.
Anniversary trip. We do it every year. So going down to Cabo, looking forward to it. And you're in beautiful St. Louis, Missouri.
That's right. It's actually nice today. A little stormy last night, but all good. All good.
Time of year.
So, Tim, recently I did a podcast with Don DeShane and Devin Thompson.
Yes.
Part of the podcast, we talked about job site theft. And right around that time, I was honored enough to be invited to a PCA of Greater Chicago. It's the Plumbing Contractors Association mm-hmm. of Greater Chicago. They had a meeting in Oak Brook, and they talked about this very subject, job site theft. And good friend John Petke with Petke Plumbing invited me. And so we're going to bring all these people on to talk about job site theft and what's going on in Chicago, especially. So let's name our guest. We have John Petke all the way from what? Santa Ana? Is that right, John?
Santa Ana, California. Yes.
Yeah. Dude. How you doing? How you doing, man?
Excellent.
Nice. We have Kelly Castro Giovanni. Kelly from, she's the president of PCA and from Terry Plumbing. Is that right, Kelly?
That is correct. Hello.
Yeah. SJ Peters. He is the executive director of the PCA of Greater Chicago. SJ.
Good to see you all and hear you all. Thank you.
And finally, we have a very special guest, Matthew Buckley. Can we call you Matt or Matt?
Yes, sir. Absolutely.
He is the director of public safety for the village of Riverside, Illinois. How are you doing?
Good. Thank you very much for having me here today.
Yeah.
Good seeing you again and being able to talk to you about these issues going on.
Yeah. So I just kind of wanted to get you all together and kind of recap this meeting that we were all at a few weeks ago at the PCA meeting. And it's all affected you, like John and Kelly. This has happened to you personally. John, tell me about your experience with what happened with you.
Well, I had already been hearing about it. A lot of contractors either having their vehicles broken into, tools stolen, or a number of shops were also broke into. Knock on wood, at that point, I had not experienced it. And then one morning at 4:48 in the morning, it was my turn. Got a call from the alarm company, went on my video and saw the culprits in my shop doing their business. They were all armed with guns and making away with a lot of very expensive plumbing tools.
Yeah.
So, and to date, I only know one contractor within my network that has not been affected by this, which is shocking because I know hundreds of contractors.
So, John, you saw this and you went plumbing vigilante, or it's a dumb question, but you got to feel helpless, right? Like you're just watching this.
Just watching them go in and out with the tools. Knowing, fortunately, that the police were on the way, but I was still 15 minutes away, being at home, just being woken up. So, yeah, pretty helpless.
And Kelly, how about your experience?
I have been fortunate enough not to have my workplace, our office and warehouse be affected, but I have had job sites be affected, as well as vans. Fortunately, no employees have been involved. It has all happened away from the employees, but I have had 4 vans robbed with very expensive equipment taken, just like John, and also copper taken from job sites, excessive mm-hmm. amounts of copper.
Mm-hmm.
And you are helpless. And unfortunately, there's not a lot that the police can do. 2 of the robberies were caught on video, so we had video proof, and there has been 1 arrest of the 5 separate robberies.
And both of you, I'm guessing, have insurance for things like this when something like this happens?
Yes, we do.
Yes, but there's a limit.
Well, I was going to say, I've talked to some other contractors, and the more you file, the more they kind of question whether this is like a legitimate claim, right?
Well, it's not even that. It's just that they, if they know that this is going to happen, they're going to adjust your rates to cover replacing these tools. And I've talked to other contractors that, you know, their insurance has quadrupled, even more in some cases.
Yeah.
Just because they know they're going to be paying out.
Yeah.
John, if I could just say too, that we've had a number of contractors who've had their employees held up at gunpoint, pistol whipped. And there's also been one particular contractor in the area who was hit 3 times within a month. And right after the news story appeared on a local TV station, he was robbed literally a day or two after that. So, you know, as John had mentioned, that he was lucky there was nobody in his shop in Chicago at the time that it was broken into. Had somebody been there, these people are walking around with guns. You know, there's also that, that physical threat.
Mm-hmm. Matt, I'm assuming that this isn't, while it's not a new phenomenon, it's certainly much more prevalent. Are these crimes of convenience, or are these much more sophisticated and planned out?
Well, I would have to say they're both. You know, a lot of them are pretty well planned, especially when they're going after the businesses, into the businesses, trying to figure out how they're going to get in there the easiest, quickest way to get in there and get out. So that's the sophisticated part. The opportunity part is when they're walking by a site and they see copper laying out, or they see tools laying out, or they see a truck that's got the doors open where they can easily go in there, grab some stuff, and be on their way. So they want to be in there, in and out pretty quick is the bottom line. But it is both of that going on. You know, I was been talking a lot about this this issue going on here in the area. And even yesterday afternoon, town next door had a bunch of tools taken from a site, but they were able to actually track these tools with AirTags. So I know we're going to talk a little bit about that stuff later. And the tools were recovered at a self-storage unit not too far away. But yes, it's a lot of crime of opportunity.
Yeah, I mean, piggybacking off of what Tim said, maybe this isn't happening more than it has in the past. Maybe it is, but maybe it's just being covered in the news more. Do you feel, Matt, like it's sometimes your hands are tied behind your back on what you can and can't do as far as like pursuing, you know, these criminals?
At times, yes. And, you know, when you say it's covered in the news more, I think it's covered in the news less.
Okay.
And the reason I say that, I think these crimes are occurring a lot more than what's being reported, because they're looked at as property crimes. They're looked at as, you know, it's just tools or it's just construction equipment. Nobody got hurt. And, you know, it's really not a news story. The bigger news stories are the ones making the news.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if somebody were injured or hurt, it might make the news, or if there was a large dollar loss type of item. But other than that, it's really not being reported as is. Unfortunately, yes, the prosecution part of it has become very difficult. Working these cases is oftentimes very difficult. And the reason why is, you know, we have to base everything off of evidence. A lot of times these people are in and out so quick. I'm sure, as John said, when he sat there and watched on his video of this crew coming into his business, taking everything, they were gone before the police arrived, I'm sure. And a lot of times they are. Even if the police do get there, they're jumping in cars right away and taking off. And our pursuit policies have tightened up a lot where it's a crime against property. It's not against person. And we're very limited on when we can pursue. So that does change how things go when it comes down to going after the bad guys. Then it comes down to evidence, what we can prove through DNA, through fingerprints, photo IDs, photo lineups, things like that. But remember, a lot of them are wearing gloves. A lot of them are wearing masks that are going and doing these crimes.
Kelly, are there any things, and John too, are there any things that you are doing in shop or, you know, in business that are, you know, preventative measures to kind of stop this kind of action?
It's a little difficult on the vans to stop the break-ins.
Yeah.
They're going to get in whether, you put whatever locking device on the van you would like to. One of my vans was broken into with a locksmith electronic device to where they were able to unlock the doors electronically.
Mm.
So it's been that sophisticated all the way down to they have an axe and they, break a hole through the back door and reach in and unlock it. So if they want to get in, they're going to get in. You can take whatever measures you like. But these thieves are very, very determined and very complex.
And John, if I could just touch on exactly what Kelly just said, she is absolutely 100% correct. You could put the best locks on a van. You could put the best alarm system. You could have those dividers between the front of the van and the rear of the van where you can't crawl through. They'll cut a hole in the side of the van if they really want to get in there and get to where the what they need to get, because that's the easiest way at that point to get into that van, because we all know the sides of the vans have pretty thin walls and they can either cut through it or chop through it with an axe and reach in there and grab what they want and be on their way pretty quickly and not even touch the doors or the locks. They've become very sophisticated with that. And programmers, Kelly touched on that a little bit. They're able to get programmers to actually unlock vehicles or start vehicles nowadays.
Well, I'm going to use a plumbing term here, John. Are these criminals becoming more brazen? You see what I did there?
Good. And yes, they are more brazen.
You mentioned that they like literally drove a truck through your shop door. Is that right?
Well, I protected my shop against that, but another shop, BE Atlas, not far from where we're at, they were hit 4 times in 1 week. And yes, they did exactly that. They steal a vehicle, so they don't care about it. They drive it through a shop door, and they got full access to get whatever they want. They typically have a second vehicle to get away in case the first one's damaged.
John and Kelly, not only have we talked about premiums for your insurance going up, just the fact that you've got to replace the tools and damage to property, I've got to assume that this also affects employee morale, if employee tools are stolen. So are there things that you're doing with your employees, such as training or best practices on what to do if they are in a situation where, somebody comes up and wants to rob them so as they don't become more aggressive and stuff? Are there things that you're doing with your employees?
Well, immediately we just let them know it's only property. So the first thing we let everybody know, from apprentices to journeymen, is it's unfortunate, but just give them the keys. If somebody holds you up at gunpoint, don't resist. Don't fight it. Just give them the keys and hopefully you'll still be safe. You kind of asked several questions. It's already affecting people wanting to be employed in the city of Chicago. There are guys that have left employment to get out to the suburbs, to get away from where the heaviest concentration of crime is. So I've been fortunate that my people live in Chicago, most of them. I haven't had that happen, but it's affecting businesses on many levels.
So I myself have, the same as John, let everybody know that it is just property. Hand over whatever it is they're looking for. Unfortunately, it's your first reaction to go on the defense. There was a van that was broken into in broad daylight on Michigan Avenue with cars passing constantly as they're breaking in the van with an axe. People are not afraid of being caught. And my two employees were walking back from a job site and came upon this van that was being broken into, and they saw all the tools being taken out. Their first reaction was to protect it.
Yeah.
Luckily, there were four robbers, and they were just taking turns, passing the tools from our van to their car to make a very quick to get away with a lot of materials in a very quick time period. And luckily, they just went away. So there was no confrontation, and we were very fortunate. But I do tell everybody they are just materials, just tools. Walk away. Let them have what they want. Your life is more important.
This Appetite for Construction podcast is brought to you in part by PERC. the Propane Education and Research Council. Propane is the energy for everyone, especially construction pros. It's a single clean energy source that can meet your project's performance, safety, and resilience goals while maintaining efficiency and lowering costs. See how propane can help meet your project's needs by visiting propane.com now. Propane, it's the energy for everyone.
That's Matt's advice is to, you know, cooperate, but be a good witness, right, Matt?
That's exactly what I was going to say, SJ, exactly that. We need good witnesses out there when this stuff happens. We don't want any of your employees getting hurt. I get it. That's their livelihood. That's their tools are their livelihood. That's how they support themselves. That's how they support your businesses. But you need to be safe also. So our goal and what we're trying to get out there is be that good witness. If you have your cell phone, maybe take a photo or a video of the license plate number. Get as much good information as possible to give us so that we can follow up on it and try to make an apprehension. You know, that is our goal, is to bring these people to justice and to make sure that they're charged accordingly. You know, touching on what Kelly said about the brazenness on Michigan Avenue in downtown Chicago with one of her trucks, it's a lot of crime of opportunity when they see these vehicles. We had a neighboring community here that they were at their fire department was at a school doing a fire drill, and somebody pulled up and said, "Hey guys, they're stealing everything off your fire truck." They looked out there, and there they were, going through all the compartments, taking tools and saws and everything else off a fire truck. We were able to catch these individuals, but that just shows even fire trucks aren't safe. And the worst part about fire trucks is we don't lock our cabinets because we need to get in there pretty quickly. So when you see a fire truck, you know, most of those cabinets are not locked because we've never had that issue really happen before where these things are happening. And, you know, it's on the increase. And going back to what John just said also about how a lot of these plumbers and employees are looking to move to the suburbs. You know, a few chiefs have told me, you know what? The reason for that is because they've picked the city clean. There's not much left. So guess where they're going to be out in the suburbs now. And we've already seen that on the rise in our areas with the amount of crime that's been going on. And to talk one more time about the brazenness, last week there's a Chick-fil-A at the corner of Harlem and Cermak in North Riverside right next door to us. 12 o'clock in the afternoon, line of cars, line of people, very busy intersection. Somebody held up the guy working the line at Chick-fil-A with a gun to his head. People are videotaping and taking photos, so we had great evidence. We were able to track the vehicle very quickly. But that just shows that it goes back to, you know, for us, I don't think there's enough consequences out there for these people that are committing the crimes. People feel almost enabled to go out there and do these things with very little consequence, which increases their ability to do so.
Yeah, SJ, I wanted to ask you, when we were at the meeting, you had mentioned that if anybody, kind of like, you know, the membership at PCA is almost like a neighborhood watch where, you know, if you have people or incidences are happening, you know, let us know. And we're like a community here. Can you kind of expound upon that?
Well, I mean, we've been sharing the knowledge. We had Matt conduct a seminar for us last fall, actually at Riverside Village Hall, because Matt, we didn't really explain it, but he's both the chief of police and the chief of the fire department. So the first step was to have his seminar and then take that information and share it not only amongst our members, but to a wider audience. And that's the reason we also had Matt come to the membership meeting that you attended in March, so that, you know, there could be an open forum to talk about it. Matt then shared a lot of his advice in terms of things that you can do to mitigate that. Also, the types of equipment that you can put into your vehicles or adopt at your shops, that kind of thing. So today is a perfect example of another way that we're trying to spread the word. This podcast is something that I definitely will share throughout, not only our membership, but throughout the entire construction industry, so that people are very aware, paying attention, following the advice that Matt gives. We don't want anybody to get hurt. We want people to take as much care and caution as they can to prevent these things, but also to avoid anybody getting injured. And I'm really terrified sooner or later, it's going to be worse than just an injury. So that's kind of where we are. Yeah.
To reiterate, you know, these criminals are going after tools and copper and things like that, but you have to assume that they're armed. Well, Kelly, you just mentioned that they were armed, but they will hurt you if you get in the way or try to be a vigilante or things like that. I had a guest on a few months ago, and he had that happen to him. And he was chasing the guy down the street, and finally he stopped and he's like, "What am I doing? Like, this is just ridiculous. I'm going to let, you know, the police take care of it and the insurance and all that." So,
right. You're not a security guard. In our case, you're a plumber or you're a fitter, whatever aspect you're in, but that's your job. It's not your job to be a security person. And that's why we were relying on and still are and will Matt's expertise and his advice.
And John, we've actually seen that, especially with the catalytic converter thefts lately,
yeah.
Where they actually have a guard or a sentry out there watching over the crew that is doing the cutting off the catalytic converter. It takes them less than a minute to cut that off. But they actually have somebody out there, a lot of times armed with rifles, guarding them, making sure the owner or nobody else comes there and tries to stop them from doing what they're doing. And if they're doing that for a catalytic converter, you know, what are they doing for high-end items? You know, exactly the same thing.
My question is, you know, they're cutting the copper, they're stealing copper, they're stealing tools. What are they doing? Are they pawning it off, going to pawn shops? I mean, is it as simple as tracking it through pawn shop? I'm just trying to figure out what the end game is for these criminals.
We do all that. You know, we try to track through our pawn shops. We get updates constantly, which, as I've also told everybody, to take photos of all your equipment, write down your serial numbers, label your equipment very well, put tracking devices on your high-end equipment, because that helps us out to try to locate it again. But a lot of these things are getting sold for pennies on the dollar.
Mm-hmm.
When they steal copper from a construction site, they're going to sell it for pennies on the dollar, which is what makes it marketable a lot of times, which doesn't help us out either, because they're not going to the pawn shops or going to some of the legitimate businesses. They're trying to get rid of it as quick as they can, however they can.
Irony is, I recently saw on Facebook Marketplace a $2,000 pressing tool for $500, and I was thinking, I'm guessing that's black market. There's just no way somebody's selling a $2,000 pressing tool for $500.
Well, there, you know, it's a good point, because on some of these plumbing groups, you'll see like, "Hey, I just bought this for, you know, $300," and people are like, "Oh, you just supported the criminal network, right? Because that's where you're getting this from." One thing, you know, this podcast, we don't want to get too political on it, but Matt, you had mentioned one of the things is there's an election coming up, and voting the right person in may help with this overall situation. Can you talk about that?
Yeah, I think it's very important. I think, and I discussed it earlier, where accountability is so important. Currently, it seems like we've gone away from that a little bit, and we need to get back on track with that. We need to hold people accountable for their actions. If you commit a crime, you know, you should be charged accordingly and face the consequences. When we don't have that, when we allow criminals, you know, I'll talk about retail theft here in Cook County. You need to commit the act 10 times before you can actually be charged with it, basically. And the threshold is now over $1,000. It used to be a lot less. So what does that do to that criminal? You know, it gives them the ability just to go out there and do those things and say, "Well, nothing's going to happen. So why don't I keep on doing it?" We need to bring back that accountability. Unfortunately, a lot of these crimes aren't getting charged or charged appropriately. So we need to hopefully get some people back into office that are going to support the victims. And that's who you are when things are taken from you. the owners of these companies, the workers, they're the victims. And it seems like we're forgetting about the victims a lot of times. We're more worried about the criminal and not prosecuting the criminal or putting them in jail or holding them accountable. But we need to get back to protecting our businesses, protecting our victims, and charging people accordingly.
I know we're talking specific to our area of the country. We're in Illinois. Do you have stats or do you know of stats from other metropolitan communities, be it, you know, the Southwest or the West Coast or East Coast? Is this pretty prevalent across the board in the U.S.?
In certain areas, it is, I believe. I have talked to friends and other coworkers, you know, that are in this position that are throughout the country. And it seems like where you have tougher laws or you hold people accountable, they have better luck with reducing crime. In areas where it's a little bit lax or people aren't held as accountable, it seems like the crime rates are a lot higher.
If I could just say, we had talked about, you know, these are property crimes and the public tends to say, well, it's insured and what's the big deal? But, you know, this is costing our contractors quite a bit of money. Not only are their insurance rates going up, but some have had to actually employ security guards overnight at their shops. For that very reason, there are increased costs to this and all the other security measures that they have to do. It's not a victimless crime just because insurance company might pay for something. And I think that we have to get away from that perception.
And it's that trickle-down effect also, SJ. It comes down to, guess who's ultimately paying for all that? The consumer.
Correct.
Because guess what? As an owner of a business, if your insurance goes up exponentially, you need to recover that. You don't have the money to pay for it out of your own pocket. So you're going to charge the consumer who's calling your company to do the work at their house. Yeah. Because it's got to come from somewhere.
Just to follow up on what Matt said earlier, they are crimes of opportunity for the most part, unless they're targeting a business and they have to do some legwork ahead of time. Three of our vans that were broken into all had advertising on there with our company name, logo, all the services we provide. We, after the third van was broken into, we took the time and the expense to take all the lettering and advertising off of our vans so that we weren't targets and, you know, crimes of opportunity, if you will. This was expensive and it also cost us additional money and we don't have that advertising any longer. We thought we had the problem somewhat solved. But then they've even followed our vans into suppliers' parking lots and broke into a completely unadvertised van while the individual was in the supplier picking up additional materials. And they all work in teams of three to four, so they can, you know, take things very quickly and be in and out in a matter of minutes.
Yeah, that's pretty crazy to hear. I mean, it's unfortunate, but that's...
Wow. Well, there have also been setups where, you know, calls are made in, you know, late night for an emergency call, and it's a complete setup, and it's designed to then accost that individual and steal from that vehicle. They've also, a number of my contractors have had their service people followed all the way home. Think about that.
I did have that happen to one of my employees. He was followed home. It was a late night call. Luckily, they waited until he went into the house and then they broke into the van and took what they wanted. They were even able to just disarm the alarm very quickly. So he never even heard the alarm go off.
You know, in a case like that, SJ, like you get a call late night, an emergency call. Would it be advisable to have two people in the car or in the, you know, the service van, or would it even matter? I don't know.
Well, now I think you're putting two people in jeopardy.
So we have gone to not going out on emergency calls overnight unless it is a customer that we service on a regular basis. Residential calls in the city of Chicago, we will not do if they're not a current customer after hours because it is not safe. And that's where one of my service plumbers was followed home and the break-in occurred outside his home. So it's not feasible to be able to or economical to be able to send two plumbers on a service call that only justifies one plumber. You can't charge the customer that, and then we end up with a loss on the call.
Matt, if I'm a contractor or a business owner listening to this podcast and I'm responsible for inventory or whatever it is, and I want a few tips on crime prevention, what are some of the tips that you may offer or suggestions?
So I wrote down a bunch of things. Definitely keeping an inventory of high-end equipment with serial numbers, photographs, labeling the equipment with your company logo or somehow putting something on there that's specific to that piece of equipment. Engraving and marking tools with some sort of unique identifier. Putting air tags or some sort of way of tracking some of that high-end equipment so that if something does happen, we can try to track it as best as possible. You know, I actually brought up putting in these low cost like dash cams, not only in the front of the vehicle, but also in the rear. So hopefully you can capture some of that on video if somebody does break into a van. Like I said, it goes back to being a good witness and having some cameras. We use cameras all the time to help us solve crimes and to look at different things. A lot of times, and the reason I say put in the front, it not only protects the company, that employee, if something does happen like road rage or things like that. But a lot of times these folks are in vehicles and it'll give us a description of the vehicle or a license plate off the vehicle to help us track those vehicles and try to find them. You know, we talk about high-end locks, but a lot of those are getting defeated. But having good locks on a vehicle is very important because a lot of times it may be a deterrent to make them go on to the look for something else. Definitely locking and putting alarms on vehicles helps. And as you can see, everything that I'm talking about is just one more layer of hopefully protection, one more thing we can put in place. Obviously, they all cost money, though. And when you do those things, you know, somebody's got to pay for it. And it's disappointing. Sometimes you have to. And the weather's very nice out in our area. Guess what kind of crimes we're going to have, you know, this weekend again? Landscapers. And the reason why is they pull up at a job site, they open up their trailer, they get out all their equipment, they're in the backyard cutting. Well, guess who pulls up in front to grab what they can and take off right away? Same thing with the plumbing trucks. Unfortunately, it's easier with the landscapers because they pretty much leave everything open and accessible.
Hey, Matt, I don't know if you can answer this question, but you know, let's say a tool is tracked by an air tag or identifier and the criminal is caught and prosecuted, what happens to them? I mean, are they just fined? Or I mean, what, do they go to jail? Or what's usually the case?
So currently right now with the Pretrial Fairness Act, we will arrest them. And depending on the cost of the items, for the most part, they're brought in, they're processed, fingerprints taken, and then they sign a piece of paper and they get a court date and they walk out the door.
It's kind of what I thought, but
the sad part is the criminals know that.
Yeah.
They know we're not able to hold them on anything. You know, they're not going to be spending the night in jail and go in front of a judge unless it meets felony amounts and the state's attorney approves the charges, where they may have to go in front of the judge in the morning, but then a lot of times they're getting an ankle monitor and they're out the door with.
For other contractors listening, so it's hard to figure out exactly what to do. But, you know, Kelly's point about she was robbed even after removing the lettering, you know, point, counterpoint. My trucks are very covered, full wraps, and I've actually come to the conclusion maybe that's a better thing. Now, yes, it's a target, but if they were to steal that vehicle, and the police say, can you identify it? Well, yes, from the front of the truck to the back, it says Betke. You can't miss it. The top of it, if you have a helicopter, the top says Betke. It's, you know, it took off going south. And you know what? Maybe it's better to have it wrapped. So I wouldn't rush to doing too much, you know, because we make big investments wrapping these trucks. And to undo that, you're undoing a lot of what you've already invested into.
It's a very good point, John.
Yeah, and John does bring up a good point. You know, when we do get these calls, the quicker we can get the information, get the license plate off the vehicle, get the description of the vehicle, we push that out to all of our neighbors. We do use a lot of LPR, which is license plate reading technology. I don't want to give up all our secrets, but I can tell you right now, as soon as we get that plate off that vehicle, it goes into our system and we start tracking where that vehicle has been or might be going, and we try to get ahead of it. We do utilize our helicopter out of Chicago and Cook County Sheriff, who will start looking for that vehicle, especially if the weather's nice and they're up in the air flying that day. We've been very successful with that. So we do get on it right away, and we try to find the bad guys as quick as possible and recover a vehicle or equipment.
Tim, what do you think about, you know, starting like a stakeout company, like trying to find these guys late at night?
No, not what I'm good at. Not what I'm good at.
Okay. Well, this was a great conversation. I'm so glad you all could jump on. And I know we could talk more about this and maybe in the future, but thank you all for coming on. Kelly, SJ, John, Matt, Tim, thank you for this great conversation. Appreciate it.
Thank you. Thank you.
Well, Tim and John, thank you for hosting it. We really appreciate it. It's very important information. We're very grateful.